We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But they can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of this program on this Thursday, November the 2nd, 2023. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And good morning, Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
Steve Jordahl. Steve Paisley Jordahl will be with us next hour. Chris has the day off, right?
That is correct.
Chris Woodward has the day off. All right, folks, you can join us on the internet if you want to. We live video stream the show at streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. That's our own live video streaming service. YouTube, you can go to YouTube and type in. What do they type in? I don't go there.
Today's Issues live, I think.
Yeah. So check that out. Or Facebook. Facebook, you can type in.
Search for Today's Issues. Right. Click through. You'll be able to see our lovely smiling faces.
We're smiling now. Yes, sir.
I just gave you the finger guns. For you liberal Democrats out there, I just triggered you. But the finger guns are like the, what do they call that? The lounge lizard guy.
Yeah.
You know, you always see in these TV shows.
Yeah.
The all sleazy right. guy who just goes, right, hey, baby.
Right. Thinks he's cool and he's not. Facebook, type in Today's Issues, and we also post the stories that we discuss on our Facebook page so you can have access. We do still do that, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thinks he's cool, but he's not. That basically sums up my whole high school career.
Thinks he's cool, but he's not.
But he's
everybody
not.
Else knows
everybody
he's
else
not.
Knows the secret.
Right. All right. So thanks for joining us, everybody. If you want to send us an email, comments@afr.net. Fred, what's leading the news this morning?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of praise for President Joe Biden, how quickly the United States reacted to the massacre that occurred in Israel back on October the 7th. The United States was there. We sent our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, there within 48 hours. The president himself has visited Israel, so very strong support so far. A lot of military presence in the area. But some feared that President Joe Biden, when the pressure began to build, when we started getting more and more pictures out of Gaza, as Israel went in there, and Israel's goal, Israel's mission, basically is to abolish the power of Hamas there in Gaza. So we started to get more and more pictures of Israel's bombing, and thanks to Hamas TV, we got a lot of visuals of civilians being injured and killed, Palestinians there. And there's been growing pressure on America to back away from supporting Israel. There's been calls for a ceasefire. Well, President Joe Biden yesterday did not use the word ceasefire, but he is calling for what he calls a pause. Now, I'm not sure what the difference is between a ceasefire and a pause. We all know what a ceasefire is Israel would have to back away for a certain period of time. Now, the White House is saying a certain period of time is needed to help get supplies into southern Gaza and to help get more Americans out. There are about 400 Americans that are living right now in southern Gaza. And just looking at that, I would wonder why American citizens would choose even to live there, but that's a story for another day. But on the issue of this pause that President Biden is proposing, it's kind of interesting that Hillary Clinton, of all people, was commenting just a few days ago that a ceasefire would be a huge mistake. And so we're going to have a listen to what she had to say a few days ago. Cut number one.
People who are calling for a ceasefire now do not understand Hamas. That is not possible. It would be such a gift to Hamas because they would spend whatever time there was a ceasefire in effect rebuilding their armaments, you know, creating stronger positions to be able to fend off an eventual assault by the Israelis.
A rather shocking statement coming from Hillary, and Hillary Clinton is paying a price for that. She teaches a course at Columbia University, which is regarded as the preeminent journalism school in the country. I don't agree with that, but
right.
That's its reputation. She teaches a course there, and yesterday, in teaching that course, 30 students got up and walked out, protesting against the statement that you just heard there from Hillary Clinton, saying a ceasefire would be a huge mistake and a gift to Hamas terrorists.
I wonder why President Biden, by the way, I totally agree. I mentioned this the other day when we talked about what Hillary Clinton had just said. I'm shocked that I agree with the former presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, on this. But why doesn't President Biden, if rather than calling the Israelis to have a host a ceasefire, why doesn't he tell Hamas to surrender? I mean, I mentioned this yesterday, you don't hear anyone saying to Hamas, why don't you just recognize that you're going to lose this, and if you were really concerned about the Palestinian people under your charge, in your hands, then you should surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but the fact of the matter is, as a member of Hamas said this week, the attack that happened by Hamas upon Israel, he said, we're going to continue to do it. There's going to be a second attack, a third attack, a fourth attack, because Israel has no right to exist.
Yeah.
So that's what you're dealing with. And if Israel was to follow President Biden's suggestion, then Hillary Clinton's exactly right. Hamas would simply prepare for that second attack, third attack, fourth attack.
Yeah. What would be accomplished? Do you think for a moment Hamas would allow all of those Palestinians to flee into Egypt?
Right. They're a bargaining chip.
Yes.
That's how Hamas views them.
Yeah, so they're not going to let them go. So the ceasefire ends and the same thing happens again and again and again. And that's why we find ourselves maybe for one time in history agreeing with Hillary Clinton on that front.
Is President Biden going to comment? And along the way, in terms of the strategy of the Israelis in dealing with Hamas, is he going to critique it? Is that where we're going with this?
Well, I don't know. We do know. We learned this morning that Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who has been very strong in supporting Israel, he is returning to the Middle East in the next 24 hours. I have a fear that pressure is going to be put on Israel by the United States now as far as our support for them, unless they agree to a ceasefire. But I do not believe Prime Minister Netanyahu is going to agree to a ceasefire.
Yeah, I'm with Ed. Why didn't the Biden call for Hamas to surrender? What's wrong with that? Ceasefire. That would save lives.
Mm-hmm. Recognize Israel's right to exist.
Yeah. Why did he say that?
Right.
Yeah. He needs to say a pause. There's no difference between a pause and a ceasefire. He just didn't want to use the word. But if I'm the president of the United States, I'm just saying, listen, Israel was attacked. 1,400 of their citizens were savagely murdered.
Yes.
On one day. Mm-hmm. They are now responding as they see fit to punish the people who did this and keep it from happening again. What country wouldn't do that?
Right. Yes.
What country wouldn't do that? Listen, as we mentioned before, this is spiritual. There's no other explanation for it. Yes, it's political. It's geopolitical now. and there is history to anti-Semitism. But we got the ambassadors being recalled from South American countries.
Israeli ambassadors?
Yes, excuse me. So South American countries, some I saw yesterday, who have ambassadors in Israel, right? They're recalling them in protest of what Israel's doing in Gaza. Israel's being condemned around the world for their response by countries like China, who have ongoing, continual human rights violations. Nobody says anything about that,
right?
Hardly. There's things going on in Africa against Christians. You got wars going on in different hotspots around the world where there's genocide taking place. There's persecution taking place, but no, we're going to just central. We're just going to concentrate on Israel.
Yeah, I mean, here. I didn't hear Joe Biden, President Biden, say to China, "We think you should pause your persecution of Uyghur Muslims." I haven't seen any resolutions being passed by the United Nations. I haven't seen anybody recalling their ambassadors from China in protest of China's human rights abuses. It's just Israel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is to my point, and you mentioned here and explained it before, it's biblical.
Yeah.
It's spiritual. They the Jewish people are under siege right now around the world. It's a scary time.
It's
to be a Jewish person, honestly.
For all of us, we never thought we would see this day. What we're seeing on the streets of America and these universities,
right?
These pro-Hamas demonstrations by students, even within the Democratic Party, you have people like Rashida Tlaib, who has refused to this moment to condemn Hamas for what they did. She is a Palestinian, and she has refused. There was a effort last night in the House to censure her, and that effort failed. There were about 20 Republicans that joined the Democrats in having that fail. Elise Stefanik, New York Congresswoman, and I think she chair of the House Intelligence Committee, she was on with Fox and Friends this morning to explain why she voted for the censure. Cut number three.
Well, I voted to censure Rashida Tlaib. She has been mimicking and parroting Hamas talking points. She refuses to correct her misinformation and terrorist propaganda, blaming Israel for the explosion at the hospital when that was Hamas. That was a Hamas rocket that exploded at a hospital in Gaza. She has failed to take that down. She should be censured. I voted to censure her. The vast majority of Republicans did so. And every Republican's going to have to defend their vote to their constituents.
Now, we have been told that one of the reasons some Republicans voted against that censure of Rashida Tlaib is because in the censure wording, the word insurrectionist was used to accuse her of insurrection. So we had some Republicans saying they don't agree with the use of that word, just as they've been opposed to using that word to describe what happened on January the 6th. They said, no, that is not a term that should be used. It's being overused, and we are opposed to the wording. So that's one of the reasons. But you know what? Go ahead.
Excuse me. Insurrection, the word.
Yeah.
That depends on who you ask.
Mm.
And their political perspective, usually, like for January 6th, for example. But trying to be objective about that word. What happened on January 6th was not an insurrection, all right? It was a riot. I agree. You might say, well, what's the difference between a riot and an insurrection? I don't think it was an insurrection. It was a protest at the Capitol that got out of control, got out of hand. An insurrection, to me, would be an organized effort with weapons and a plan and sort of a paramilitary type style to take over a government. That's a true insurrection. So I think what Democrats do in using the word not all Democrats, but most of them, using the word insurrection to describe January 6th, Maybe that would be true in a sort of a generic sense, but I don't think it's a technical legal proper use of the word insurrection, nor do I think what are they talking about now? Tlaib, what's her name?
Rashida Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman from Detroit.
Correct.
Area.
Correct.
Are they talking about when they had the sit-in at the Capitol?
I think that's right, because it was a sit-in.
That wasn't an insurrection.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't think. Do you guys think that was an insurrection?
No.
I think what Marjorie Taylor Greene. Yes, her. She was the one who sort of wrote this, I think, as I understand it.
Yes.
Which I'm a fan of hers, as far as her what she says and does, most of the time that I can tell. I mean, she seems to be a real fighter. Mm-hmm. But I think what some of the Republicans who didn't go along with this, like Chip Roy and Thomas Massie, who are solid conservatives, they were saying, I can't go along with calling what the sit-in an insurrection. Mm-hmm. But I think what she was trying to do was point out the hypocrisy. Marjorie Taylor Greene, mm-hmm, was pointing out the hypocrisy of the left by calling January 6th an insurrection and not calling what happened with the sit-in, mm-hmm, a week or so ago. I know that's a long-winded way of describing, but insurrection, both sides sometimes try to use words to make the other side look as bad as they possibly can, mm-hmm, when the words are actually being misused. That's
kind of like calling people a fascist or a Nazi. You're taking you're taking a term that has technical definitions attached to it, and you're using the emotional power of it for political purposes, and that's what the word insurrection.
Insurrection is kind of like a coup,
right?
Uh-huh. Right. Uh-huh. Like on January 6th, that was not a coup. There was nobody tried to burn down the building. Okay. Nobody took. Now, was it a protest that people got out of control?
Yes.
And shouldn't have done things that they did? Yes.
Yeah.
But nobody shot up the place, held hostages, you know, which would happen in a true coup or insurrection. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that what happened on January 6th was that whatever the percentage was of people that did get out of hand, because there were a lot of people just meandering around taking pictures, sightseeing, that there were people who thought that the opposite had happened. There were people who thought an attempt to steal an election had occurred. In other words, within the rules set by the Constitution. Now, whether they're right, whether they're wrong, I guess we'll argue about that. People will argue about it for years to come. But they thought an attempt had been made to steal the election. If you were to ask them, they would say, no, we weren't trying to overthrow the Constitution. We wanted the Constitution to be followed. And so we wanted to hold up the counting of the votes, certification of the votes, because we were under the impression there were states out there who thought the election had been stolen, and we wanted to give them.
Yeah.
That's not an insurrection.
Right.
But the word insurrection carries emotional power. And we all know if you repeat a word often enough, it becomes ingrained. And on the left, that's what happened. It's become ingrained.
I think one of the big stories coming out of this, and it's not over yet, pardon me, is the open hatred for Jews and the Jewish state. It's anti-Semitism, especially on our university campuses, has been there. We've done stories for several years now. But it has burst out. And it is ugly.
I wonder if Hillary Clinton was surprised or shocked. Again, what started
the walkout?
If you just now joining us, what we're talking about is the anti-Semitism that is defined as hatred for Jews that is being expressed openly around the world, which is, some people find shocking. Well, even within the Democrat Party here in the U.S., it's a very divisive issue. Hillary Clinton was teaching a class at which Columbia?
Columbia. Yeah.
Columbia University, which is a school in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the class subject matter is, but she was giving a speech about how Israel can't surrender to Hamas, or they have to fight you can't have a ceasefire. It would be to the advantage of Hamas. And how many students walked out?
30 of her students walked out.
30 of her students walked
out. In protest.
Got up and walked out of her
class. What was the size of her class?
It's 300.
So okay, 10%.
10% of the kids went out. But, you know, it's interesting. Many Jews who live here in America are politically liberal. And I think this is going to present a problem, especially if Joe Biden asks for a ceasefire. Because, and one of those I would consider politically liberal is Maya Bialik. Now, you may know her as one of the main actresses in the Big Bang Theory sitcom. She's also been co-hosting Jeopardy. She's a very smart lady. She has an earned PhD. But she took to social media the other day to describe how shocked she is, born and raised here in America, how shocked she is at what she is seeing against Jews. Cut number 7.
I decided to talk a little bit about what some people may not understand about what your Jewish friends are experiencing. So imagine if there was a massacre of an ethnic group or a religious group, the equivalent of 50,000 Americans. And imagine if what happened after that was that all over the world, there were marches of tens of thousands of people calling for further massacre of those people. I can't imagine it. It's unimaginable. And that's what it feels like right now as a Jewish person. There has not been an experience in my lifetime that has prepared me for this. The Holocaust, while we say we will never forget, many have forgotten. And the swiftness with which the global population has stepped up to redefine terrorism, to redefine the right of a people to exist. Nothing has prepared me or any of us for this. There is a strain of anti-Semitism that is alive and well. It is thriving at my alma mater, where the chant, "We want a Jewish genocide," was echoed in the quad in front of Royce Hall. The place where I took my doctoral hood had students of all backgrounds chanting for a Jewish genocide. This is not acceptable. It's not normal. We should not normalize it. I'm disappointed in many institutions I have always held sacred. And the lack of humanity is devastating. I won't apologize for expressing what I'm going through, what so many of us are going through. We are looking for moments of joy, but it feels like a nightmare that we cannot wake up from right now.
Mm. Who is that again, Fred?
Mayim Bialik. And if you watch any TV, you know, that Big Bang Theory was a huge sitcom. And now she's been on Jeopardy as a co-host. But
wow.
Well known.
Well, and what else can you say but to at least say, I wouldn't want to be in the shoes of the Jewish people. And I'm with her in terms of the shock of seeing this in this country.
I know.
Now, in Muslim countries, that kind of anger and hostility is just commonplace. That, you know, that's par for the course. But throughout the West, and especially in this country, seeing it on college campuses and almost no repercussions?
Yeah, I know.
It is frightening.
All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Abraham Hamilton III will be with us. So we're going to visit with Abe. He's a constitutional attorney. We don't have to pay him by the hour. He's already on payroll here. We'll be back in just a minute.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ed and Fred. Hey, on the lighter side, I don't know if it's the lighter side if you're in this home, but in a town called Lake Mary, Florida, which is in South Florida, the family had Halloween, right? So they had a bunch of candy out on their tables and outside their house, you know. And I guess they went inside for a while, or the evening was over, but the candy remained. Well, a huge black bear strolled in and decided he would take the rest of the candy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. A large bear was caught on camera in Lake Mary, Florida, yard munching on Halloween treats. And that's not a small bear. I didn't realize they had so many bears. Florida, you just don't think bears in Florida, do you?
I wouldn't have thought that. Mm-hmm. Or panthers or anything else. But
you think the bear just goes ahead, rapper and all?
They're pretty good. They're pretty adept at
taking off wrappers.
Yeah, I think they might spit it out afterwards.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm sure bears also swallow bone and all that. They can swallow all kinds
they
of stuff.
They can stomach it.
And then, you know, let's pass it on. But
of course, it's funny to read about, but if you walked out to your door to go clean up the table,
Guess what you'd say?
Come face to face with a big black bear, it wouldn't be funny then, I guess.
Sorry to interrupt you. Carry on. I thought what you were going to say is somebody sent around, I saw this, I think it was on Twitter, but, you know, folks have started just leaving candy out in a bowl outside their house, and so you don't have to open the door.
Yeah, it's real personable.
Well, I think it may have something to do with flu and all that kind of stuff, but that there is that side too. Why not interact with people? But somebody had on their door camera these three ladies with their kids. They ran up, and it was a huge bowl, and stuffed all the candy into their bags. And of course, the Twitter was going crazy about, you know,
it's Biden's America.
You're teaching your kids to be selfish and to basically steal. And then others were saying, if you're trusting humanity to be good, well, that's on you. I thought that's what you were going to talk about, but a big bear.
Maybe that family needed a bear. That would teach the kids, wouldn't it?
But I just wanted to say Biden's America, because when Trump was Trump that morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Abraham Hamilton III. Is your microphone on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to say Biden's America, because I remember when Trump was president, anything that would happen negative, doesn't matter how far removed from Trump it was called Trump's America.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say this is Biden's America.
I'll just say this. I don't remember seeing a video of a bear stealing Halloween candy when Trump was
president.
That's
what I'm saying.
Yes.
Don't say it's coincidental. Yeah. It's not coincidental. It is coincidental. I don't think so.
No.
Anyway, there was also this video that went viral. of this young kid. He and his mom, look, he and his mom and his little sister. That's what I thought it was. He was about probably 7. And so he goes to the porch first, and it's like one of these families that left candy out.
Right.
Like you're talking about. And he sees that the bowl is empty, right? And then he turns around, and here comes his little baby sister, like 2 or 3 years old, with the mom. And the brother realizes, my little sister's going to get up here, and there's nothing in the bowl, and she's going to be really disappointed and or cry. And so he reached in his bag and got a bunch of candy out.
And put it in the bowl.
Put it in the bowl.
It was really sweet.
Did you see that?
I did see it.
Yeah.
It's a great kid.
Yeah, exactly. You know you've done something right there.
As opposed to the other 3 parents,
right,
who were teaching their kids to steal whatever's not nailed down.
Right. And this bear that just thought he would just violate private property rights.
Right.
There's all kind of problems.
Socialist bear.
Huh?
Socialist commie.
Right. Well, that's when you have no bail for bears, then this is what happens. They just feel free to rampage.
It's a regular animal farm.
That's the bear that stepped off the California state flag.
That's true. That's right.
California, baby.
Yeah. California.
The golden bear. That was Jack Nicklaus, actually. All right, so I think we're digressing. What do you fellas think? You think we're digressing here?
Abe is over there thinking, I have work to do, and this is what I'm here for, to listen to these guys talk about Halloween candy.
Right. All right, so, Abe, good morning to you, my
friend.
Good
morning.
Okay. So, Abe.
Yes.
Is this the end of the world, what we're seeing here?
That's
my first question.
Yeah. I mean, we can start with the softballs.
Yes, that's right.
What's going on here?
Like topics. Daily, it seems that we're careening closer and closer to the end of the world. Which,
you know, go ahead.
This is
the best chance the Cowboys have had to win the Super Bowl in probably 10 years. And you're telling me we may not even make it to January or February. That's what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Hey, seriously.
They always win the offseason.
The what now?
They always win the offseason Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Cowboys?
Yeah.
You're the Saints guy. You have no love for the Cowboys. I know that.
No, I have no love for anyone in the NFL.
Except the Saints.
Except for the Saints.
All right, so let me ask you this. On a serious note, we were talking about anti-Semitism here and the rise of it around the world.
Yeah.
And this is a – I mentioned this is something spiritual going on. There's something spiritual going on here. This is it. I mean, we're talking about the ambassadors for several South American countries are recalling several countries are recalling home their ambassadors in protest of what Israel is doing in Gaza.
Yeah.
We see it all over the Muslim world. China is taking, you know, their search engines, like we use Google, and they're removing Israel from the maps. The head of the United Nations says, you know, Hamas's attack, slaughter of those Israelis was not done in a vacuum. That's what he said. I'm serious. So, I mean, what do you think, biblically speaking, what's going on here? Why such open hostility toward the Jews from around the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think the scripture is clear when he says that all the nations around the world will hate Israel, will oppose them at various points. And it's remarkable. I spent some time talking about this on the Hamilton Corner last night. I played a clip that was in Arabic, but I had the translation, thanks to memory, of the Hamas spokesperson who said, we'll repeat October 7th over and over again. October 7th, October 8th, 9th, 10th, October 1 millionth. We're going to do it all over again because our commitment, he says, is it to annihilation? Yes, it is to annihilate the Jews. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. That's their commitment, which... if you know anything about Hamas, that's not new. That was in their charter.
In their charter.
When they existed, when they were initially formed, it's not new. And even those who would say that this is about, I had somebody rather uninformedly say, well, if Israel just would retreat to pre-1967 borders and everything would be fine. I say, oh, you mean the 6-day war when the Arab nations attacked Israel and the pre-1967 borders existed pre-1967, and they still attacked Israel.
Right.
Seems to me that the attack and hatred toward Israel doesn't really have anything to do with land, especially if you study the Quran. It has everything to do with who they are. And then I asked the question, can you tell me the genesis of the idea of where do we get the idea of Palestinian from? Of course, they were unable to tell me. And I said, very simply, the term Palestinian, which started as Syria Palestina, dates back to the Roman Emperor Hadrian. There was no historical ethnic group called Palestinians. And I'm not trying to besmirch that. I understand.
No, they're Arabs.
So long ago. Yes. Jordanians, Egyptians,
right.
And the description of Syria Palestina was literally Syrian Palestine after the Roman Emperor sought to find what has been Israel's most heinous enemy over time? The Philistines. Right. So let's rename the area after we remove the Jews from the area, spread them around the world. We're going to rename the area after their most fierce enemy. There was no ethnic identity of Palestinians until you get to Yasser Arafat, who himself was Egyptian.
Right.
He's born in Egypt and is an Egyptian. And so I'm not saying this to minimize the significance of civilian casualties and things of that nature. But the same Hamas spokesperson was asked, or another Hamas spokesperson, you guys have been receiving aid from America, from Israel, from the United Nations for years, but you've built hundreds of miles of tunnels under the ground, but you've never thought to build a bomb shelter above the ground? No, because they don't have any threats of being bombed, generally speaking. And the spokesperson said, well, the tunnels are to protect the Hamas fighters. Protection of the civilians is the responsibility of the U.S. and the U.N. and Israel. What does that mean?
Yeah, which says the Hamas organization doesn't care about the Palestinian people.
They're cannon fodder for the jihad.
Human shields.
Yeah, I mean, this is... It is in their religion, it is a glory for people to die during jihad against infidels.
And to be even more specific, it's the only way you can have a surety
right.
of paradise.
Yeah. Right.
The Islamic faith has no security of eternal life except for the Mujahideen.
Right. So it is clearly a spiritual thing that is going on. Fred and I were talking during the break, and we've talked a little bit this week. I always try to stay away from saying, hey, this looks like this prophecy or that prophecy. But when you look at Ezekiel 38 and 39, and I know amongst our listeners there are different various eschatologies in terms of the way they interpret what the Bible says about the time of the end. But it sure looks like the setup is coming into place for Ezekiel 38 and 39, which is a war against the nation of Israel, which now exists since 1948 for whatever, 1800, 1900 years. Commentators, I'm sure, probably thought, well, I don't know how to interpret this. There is no Israel. And so now you're looking at all these countries that are named in there demonstrating hostility towards the very existence
when
of
was
the
Ezekiel
people.
Written?
Oh, I don't know, 500 years before
BC.
Yeah.
Yeah. 500 BC.
The prophecy is recorded during the Babylonian exile, so Ezekiel
so
is in Babylon.
Approximately 3,000 years ago.
I'd say it's close to that.
Close to that, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So Ezekiel, is any other part of the book of Ezekiel prophetic?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of prophetic passages in
it. So 38 and 39, if you go and read that, describe basically a worldwide attack on the country of Israel.
Well, yeah, and the surrounding nations.
Yeah, and I would
especially.
Say go back to 36 because the scripture reveals, and this is where people can find some equivocation, rather, when God says it's not about anything special about them other than my choice. See, this is going on because the nations of the world have to come to recognize that I am God.
Right.
And as God, I get to determine what does and what does not happen. It's not that the whole notion of Israel being a chosen people has nothing to do with their performance.
Yeah. Right.
Just like salvation in the New Testament context is not because you're so great, as handsome as you are, Tim. The Lord didn't save
yes.
you.
I get that a lot, Abe. I get that a lot. It's a burden I carry.
Right to the beginning, after coming out of Egypt in Exodus and Deuteronomy, God says, I chose you not because you were greater than other these nations, because you were smaller.
Yes.
And the book of Ezekiel
talking
is
talking about to the Jews, the Hebrews, the children of Israel.
So God said that one of the repeated phrases in the book of Ezekiel is, so they will know that I am the Lord. And then Ezekiel 37, where the prophet is asked, looking at this valley of dead, dry bones, can they live again? And Ezekiel says, Lord, you know.
Lord, you know.
And then God tells him to prophesy, and you out of a valley of a vision of dead bones, you have an entire new nation arise. So is that a reference to the reconstitution of Israel? I guess time will tell, but
Seems like it.
It's really extraordinary. And then I think Ezekiel 36 has, I think that chapter talking about.
What do you say to, Fred, feel free to chime in here, but I'll ask Abe the question. What do we say when folks say, maybe even fellow Christians, they say, I don't understand what's so special about Jews or the Hebrew people when Jesus changed everything. Jesus said, whosoever. Mm-hmm. So Paul preached the salvation of the Gentiles, even mm-hmm. though he was a Jew. So the relationship between God and man, excuse me, changed from just the Jews to the Jesus coming for the sins of the world.
Well, so, I wouldn't say Jesus changed everything. I would say Jesus fulfilled everything. The Lord created the Hebrew people, and I've explained this on the Hamilton Corner before. The term Hebrew comes from the fact that the Lord first moved in Terah, Abraham's father, to move from Ur of the Chaldees. Some people think that Abraham came from Ur to Canaan. Actually, Terah goes from Ur to Haran, which is just north of Israel, of Canaan. Then Abram goes from Haran into Canaan. And when he arrives in Canaan, the people are like, hey, dude, you're not from around here. You're from over there. The Hebrew word is there, Eber, which where Hebrew comes from. But the Lord told Abram that in you, all the nations of the earth, all the families of the earth would be blessed. When you talk about the reality of the Jews, the facts are, this is just the facts. It's not about ethnic identity, because two of the major tribes in Israel are actually half Egyptian. Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, were born from an Egypt. So from the very beginning, you've had, you know, mixed ethnic identities and ancestors. You've had, like, Rahab the harlot infused not in just to the nation of Israel, but mm-hmm. into the lineage of Jesus Christ. Then this has been all throughout. The specialness is not about anything inherent in the people. It has everything to do with God being a covenant-keeping God, just like he says of us who are Christians in the New Testament context, that it's not that you first loved me. It's that I loved you.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And it is the thing that is special, if you will, is God's commitment to keeping his faithful covenant, even when people are unfaithful.
Yes. Yeah. So, Fred, I've heard some people say, well, the Jews have rejected Jesus Christ. So I don't understand why you Christians keep talking about the Jews as having a special relationship with a God. I don't mean a God like in there are many. The God who they don't, that they reject. Does that make sense?
No. Yeah. And what you have to remember, and Abe has been alluding to this, God chose a group of people to manifest who he is through them.
Because he wanted to.
That he is sovereign. All right?
Right. Okay.
Now, some people go beyond that and they say they're, you know, the Jews have a separate salvation. No.
No, they have to submit to Jesus Christ.
They have to submit to Jesus Christ.
Like everybody else.
It's called dual covenant. And that's simply not true. But Paul in Romans chapter 11 warns the Gentiles, don't get arrogant mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because God is not through with the Jewish people.
Right.
And again, depending on your eschatology, there is going to be a huge revival amongst the Jews during the 7-year tribulation period. 144,000 witnesses, 12,000 from each tribe. These are events that are yet to occur. Which ought to tell you also.
Do the Jehovah's Witnesses know this? Because they're going to be really disappointed.
Well,
if they're, huh?
Well, I think they're going to be really disappointed for a number of reasons. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, they're already taking those slots. You know what I'm saying?
Or the, so they think.
Back to you, Fred.
Yeah. Oh, damn. No,
but as we say, it's exciting to watch, and we've been talking about 38-39. Various people have various opinions when that is going to occur, because we know it's not just about the attack or the planned attack of these nations, but it's what God does
right
in the midst of that.
What is he going to do? What's God going to do?
God is going to deal personally with those nations that attacked Israel.
The description, depending on your viewpoint, is either fire from heaven, or a lot of people think it's nuclear weapons, because the description of what happens to those armies attacking is horrifying.
It's annihilation.
Guess who has nuclear weapons?
It's exactly right.
Israel.
Yeah.
And
here's the thing. I think that what the Muslim nations will, if that's, maybe that's coming up in the immediate future, maybe it's 100 years from now, I don't know. But when it does happen, what those Muslim nations will be thinking is our God against theirs. And if they lose that dramatically, all right, who knows what that does to the religion of Islam? Does it collapse? Because their faith almost collapsed when, when the West started taking over all these Muslim lands in the 17 and 1800s, mm-hmm. and then the 1900 with the defeat of the Ottoman Turks, along with Germany, Austria-Hungary, carved it up. There was a real theological crisis that occurred in Islam, because how could Allah allow the infidels to beat us?
I go back to the verse, but be not deceived, God is not mocked. 2 Kings 19, I think, is the account of King Hezekiah surrounded by the Assyrians. And remember, the Assyrians were taunting, standing outside the wall of Jerusalem. You think your God is going to save
right.
you?
Yeah.
Mocking them. Look what the Assyrian king has done to all these other nations.
And their gods.
And their gods. And what happens? They wake up one morning and there's 183,000 dead Assyrian soldiers. The angel of the Lord went through the camp.
Yeah. And that's why I mentioned yesterday, and then I'll toss this to you. You're the pastor in the group. So I mentioned yesterday, I said, this is a time for people to start getting right with God. Okay, so we don't know when the end will come, but Jesus taught in one of his parables about the wise and foolish virgins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why don't you just preach for a minute to people who are listening, who are watching things happen, hearing a discussion like this. Hopefully they're hearing something from their pastors at church mm-hmm. about what's going on. And what would you say to people who are listening who don't know the Lord, or maybe had known the Lord in the past, but now are backslidden or fallen away or just engulfed in worldliness? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say, especially in light of international events, national events, the uncertainty, the instability in our own nation, seeing the utter corruption infiltrating the upper echelons of our own governmental apparatus, it reveals the instability in the lack of security in anything else but the Lord. You know, Jesus, after providing the Sermon on the Mount that culminates right at about chapter 7, he talks about the wise man who have heard these words of mine and puts them into practice. He's like the wise man who builds his house upon the rock, but the foolish man hears all of this and then still doesn't put anything into practice. It's like building this house upon the sand. And so when the winds come, when the winds blow, when the storms come, not if, when they come, great will be the fall of the foolish man's response. And so I would say just very soberly, you know, candidly and emphatically, that all of the swirling uncertainty around also matches a lot of the uncertainty internally. Mm-hmm. There are people who have lives, life pursuits, hobbies, and things of that nature trying to fill a void that will only be satisfied in Christ alone. That the uncertainty externally and internally should move you with the wisest move you'd ever made in your life to submit yourself to Jesus Christ. If you have never heard the gospel before, one of the best ways I can communicate this to you is that the Son of God became the Son of Man so that the sons of men could become sons of God. There's only one name under heaven by which by which men must be saved, and it is in Jesus Christ. If you have previously been familiar with the Lord but have strayed away, you know better than many some of the things that are written in Scripture. Today is the day of salvation. Heart, not your heart, because none of us are guaranteed a tomorrow. While we're watching these events transpire, nothing guarantees you and I will be able to wake up tomorrow morning.
Right. Well said. Well said.
Amen. Talk with Abraham Hamilton III. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. If you want to re-listen to what we've talked about the last 15, 20 minutes, you can go to our podcast this afternoon. We'll have it posted. Go to AFR.net, AFR.net, click on Today's Issues, podcast. You click on the podcast tab, and then Today's Issues will be on there. That's the name of this show. pardon me. So, it's you know, the next month, 2 months, 3 months, it's going to be, I don't know what adjective I would use. Interesting is an understatement, to see what's going to happen with Israel. And I think Israel, it appears to me Israel's taking the approach this time, you know what, we're going to do what we got to do, and we're not going to listen to we're not going to listen to the world, so to
right.
speak. And you know, Turkey's saying we might send an army to, if Israel continues to bomb in Gaza, try to taking on Hamas. And nobody relishes a war, but I think Israel's saying, you know what, you guys can say what you want to, condemn us, but we're going to take care of our country and our citizens, and otherwise we're not going to exist.
Right.
So it's kind of like, what do you have to lose? Well, you have to fight back, or you're going to lose your whole country. The attacks will continue. That makes sense?
Right.
It does.
All right. Thank you, Abe. Appreciate it. The Hamilton Corner this afternoon.
This afternoon. Right? Be there or you are square.
Okay. Hamilton Corner each afternoon, Monday through Friday, 5:05 Central Time on American Family Radio. We'll see you back here in 5 minutes.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.